Chapter 22. Copkind was walking on air. He'd only been in a handful of relationships in his life, and none of his prior girlfriends approached Pezzini in the looks or brains department. Amazing, the way she'd knocked on his door. Every red-blooded American male entertains daydreams of a beautiful woman mysteriously arriving at his doorstep, but no one expects it to happen. So what if she was a cop, and there'd been a murder? Through some mysterious process he didn't understand, Copkind had convinced her to go on another date with him. Copkind was from Syracuse, the third son of a career Air Force guy and stay-at-home mom. Both Copkind's older brothers were in the Air Force. He himself had enlisted in the Navy, served a 3-year hitch, decided he wanted a civilian life. The Navy posted him to Japan where he first became interested in swords, and the rudiments of polishing. After his honorable discharge, he remained in Japan for several years apprenticing to a master polisher named Kenji Makara. By the time Copkind left for the States, he and Kenji had celebrated St. Patrick's Day with green sake, and swore undying fealty to each other. He went into the polishing studio, picked up the newspaper-wrapped long sword, knelt at his polishing table, the todai, and unsheathed the sword. It was a hisakuni from the year 1199, the master's signature and the date chiseled into the tang. Copkind had been working on the shidaji togi, or foundation. The sword was in sad shape, having been completely neglected for at least half a century. Rust had gained tiny fox holes in the surface from which a spider web of decay expanded. But the steel was good, and Copkind was confident he would be able to remove the blemishes. After a full day of polishing, he'd succeeded in smoothing out the two upper surfaces, or shinokiji. Once they were finished, he would tackle the lower surface, or gi, then the kisaki, point, and mune, back edge. All other parts of the sword had to be trued first, saving the cutting edge for last. Dribbling water on the stone, Copkind ran the blade back and forth over the block of arado, coarse polishing stone from the Ohomura quarry in Shinano province, a traditional source of good arado stone in Japan. Copkind was convinced somewhere in the vastness of the United States, good polishing stone existed. Possibly in the West. He intended to conduct a search someday, with the idea of opening a quarry in the United States. Good polishing stones commanded anywhere from a couple hundred to a couple thousand dollars. Copkind obtained his through Kenji. He found the back and forth action of the blade soothing, a form of meditation. He lost himself in the vibration of the blade in his hands, the hum in his ears. And what appeared before his mind's eye but Detective Pezzini, wearing the little black dress and dancing to Kid Creole and the Coconuts. Ah, yes, the Coconuts. He imagined her in his arms, the way she moved, the taste of her lips, the scent of her hair. Ouch! Copkind looked down. The red streak blossoming on the surface of the blade announced that he'd sliced open his left index finger. Served him right for daydreaming on the job. At least, he thought, it wasn't another one of the cursed Muramasa blades, like the one that had cut him a few months ago. Copkind was bleeding heavily, crimson droplets splattering the wet stone, running over the edges. He got up holding his hand, went to the large utility sink against the wall and ran cold water over the wound. He opened the first aid box attached to the wall and fumbled with the back teen. Yoshi came into the room yawning and snarling. Don't just stand there. Do something? Copkind commanded, tearing open a band-aid with his teeth. At last he got the bandage around the cut and the bleeding stopped. His hands looked like leather that had been dragged over barbed wire, he'd cut himself so often. He'd gone for months without a serious cut, then the Muramasa. Now it had been barely 3 days since the last cut. It certainly didn't pay to get distracted. Yoshi suddenly leaped onto the workbench, scrabbling for an instant at the ledge and knocking a mallet and a chisel to the floor, before gaining purchase and letting out a shriek. An instant later, the door chimes tinkled softly. Wiping his hands, Copkind headed for the front. Adrian Heck stood in Copkind's front office wearing aviator shades and a black cashmere sweater, clutching a long, narrow package wrapped in an elaborate golden silk brocade sword bag and tied with a heavy silk cord terminating in ostentatious tassels. It took Copkind a minute to register. A little like finding Bill Gates in your foyer. They'd been introduced at Bratton's party, but what did the developer want with him? Mr. Hecht, Copkind said. What can I do for you? Hecht was examining the certificates and prints on the wall. Bratton tells me you're the best sword polisher in New York. Well, I don't know about all that. Bratton is not one to use hyperbole. As you know, I'm a collector. I've heard. I'd love to see your collection sometime. That can be arranged. He held up the package. I'd like you to polish this. I appreciate that, but I'm booked solid for the next couple of years. I'm an impatient man, Copkind, and I have a great deal of money. Name your fee. Copkind grimaced. He'd always thought of himself as a man of honor. Bushido was based on honor. But he was also a man with needs and aspirations. There was no shame in accepting a special commission for a windfall profit. Mr. Hacked, I hardly know where to start. I make a good living. I will pay you $100,000 if you can turn this sword around in 5 days. Impossible. But was it? The 100 grand danced behind his eyes like children circling a maypole. If he worked 12 hours a day, a grueling prospect, it was possible. 100 grand bought a lot of polishing stones. What kind of sword is it? I don't know. Excuse me? Heck stifled a sneeze by pressing up on his nose. I've taken a bit of a gamble and purchased a sword sight unseen from a dealer in Japan. How? I've been dealing with this gentleman for many years. He's dying, and wants to leave something for his heirs. He is selling me something that has been in his family for generations with his personal guarantee that it's what I'm looking for. What are you looking for? I believe it to be a lost Muramasa. Yoshi brushed aside the beads and entered, snarling and yawning. Hecht took a step back. I'm allergic to cats. Sorry. Copkind scooped the cat up and dumped it back on the other side of the curtain. Like most sword experts, Copkind knew about Muramasa and his supposedly cursed swords. You don't know which one? I was hoping you could identify and authenticate it for me. My agent tells me the signature was removed centuries ago. What's the rush? I want to show it next week. Would you like a cup of tea? I don't have time right now. Copkind, Bratton tells me you're the best sword polisher in the country, maybe the best working outside of Japan. Copkind blushed, but didn't bother to deny it. Does this have anything to do with Bachman? Bachman was a friend of mine. An angry look came into the developer's cold blue eyes, and for an instant, Copkind was afraid Hacked was going to take a poke at him. He took a half step back to be ready, just in case. The look passed. Don't be absurd. I've never dealt with Bachman. I knew him, of course. We'd show up at the same gallery shows. I had no business with him, and I had nothing to do with his death. Hecht dared Copkind to argue with him. Copkind didn't take the dare. Men like Hecht, men who were accustomed to ruling empires and making split-second decisions affecting the lives of thousands, were seldom dissemblers. Copkind considered himself an excellent judge of character. As far as he was concerned, Hecht was telling the truth. All right, Mr. Hecht. I believe you. Tell you what. Leave the sword and I'll get to work on it right away. I'm not sure I can deliver in 5 days, but I could do it in a week. Hecht frowned. I don't want to have to postpone my party. I was hoping to show the sword there. Copkind shrugged. I tend to allow myself more time than I actually need. You'll do it? I'll try my best, but I won't guarantee I can turn it around in 5 days. If I stay at the bench too long, I get tired. My concentration falters. Hecht held up a hand. I understand. I just don't want to show a blade that looks like a bad case of varicose veins. However, this deal is contingent on absolute discretion. No one must know you have this sword, understand? Copkind nodded. No, you don't understand. I mean absolutely no one but yourself. Not your lover, not your mother. No one. Copkind took a step backward and bowed his head. Wakaremos, he said. Hecht took the sword polisher's card and left. Yoshi came back into the room, curling between Copkind's legs. He knelt and picked the cat up. What could possibly be so urgent about polishing an old sword? My. Adrian Hecht. Hoda thunk it. Carrying the cat and the sword, he went through his showroom into the back room where he'd been polishing, unconsciously whistling the Colonel Boogie March. He was excited about the prospect of the mystery sword. A collector as important as Hecht would want an important sword. If Copkind could identify it, and verify the identification, it would send his stock, already high, through the roof. One wall was covered floor to ceiling in oak bookcases he'd built himself. The shelves were filled with books, many of which he'd obtained in Japan. Standing on a stool, Copkind reached for the top shelf, which badly needed dusting, and, using both hands, retrieved an ancient, leather-bound tome titled Kuyami Gusa, published in Japan in 1890, and translated by a Christian missionary in China, who had obtained it in trade. As an antiquarian, Copkind was aware of the book's value. Strictly as a collector's item, It was priceless. The fact that he owned probably the only existing copy of an English translation didn't faze him. Recognizing the Oshikata, he'd snatched it up at a bargain basement price. It had proven to be an invaluable tool for appraisals. The book contained detailed histories of most of the great sword makers, beginning in the 10th century. The book was 768 pages long and weighed 21 pounds. A cloud of dust rose like residue from an underground nuclear test when Kopkind set the book on the workbench. He imagined the lonely missionary, one Rufus T.K. Laughlin, by name, spending endless hours in the shade of a ginkgo tree laboring at his translation. Ironic, that a man of peace would devote his life to translating a book of war. Laughlin had apparently been trained at Oxford or Cambridge, because he had included an extensive bibliography and index. The project must have consumed the bulk of his adult life. How utterly quixotic, Kopkind thought. Living in China, translating Japanese, the Reverend Laughlin made himself a double outcast. Kopkind searched the index for Muramasa. The Muramasa entries covered half a page, and included not only the earlier, shadowy, legendary Muramasa, but his descendants who were active through the 16th century. Yoshi leaped on the workbench, purring like a generator. Burying his face in the cat's fur, Kopkind said, "Yoshi, guard the book. I need tea." After he had prepared a cup of tea for himself, Kopkind pulled up a stool and began to read. As a sword expert, he was aware of the Muramasa's reputation, and the Tokugawa Kei's efforts to destroy them. He'd only read portions of the book previously, because it was a chore to decipher Reverend Laughlin's cramped, angular penmanship. Kopkind read slowly, running his finger under the text. Eventually, he came to the tale of Shigeyoshi the magistrate.